this is your Polycast for Thursday, November 10th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Minnesotans react to Donald Trump's election, Jason Lewis is headed to Congress, and rocky days may be ahead at the state capitol. The 7th Congressional District in western Minnesota leans Republican. Mitt Romney won the 7th in 2012 by 32,000 votes. Donald Trump did much better, with more than a 100,000 vote margin this year. And several counties in the district that went for President Obama 4 years ago flipped into the Trump column this year, including Clay County. Dan Gunderson talked with voters there to see what they expect or hope for from a Trump administration.
Most voters I approached were not eager to talk about the election. Ambivalence seems to be a theme, with most people expressing little enthusiasm for their presidential vote. Barnesville is a farming community of about 2,500, located 20 minutes down I-94 from Moorhead. Big piles of harvested corn on the edge of town attest to a bumper crop. At Rube's Barbershop on Main Street, insurance agent Terry Olson is getting a trim. The election was about change, he says. How did he vote?
I voted American. How did you vote?
Olson wants Trump to pay attention to international relationships because the economy here depends on strong export markets for farm crops to countries like China.
And I think now it's a world economy. It has to, you know, we all have to get along. It used to be just the United States, but now it's not. We ship our soybeans and corn all over the world, and we have to get along with those people to at least work together. I guess we don't necessarily have to like one another, but we have to work together.
A couple blocks down the street, Ken Colding is leaving the post office. He generally votes Republican, and he voted for Donald Trump, but he says it wasn't an easy choice.
I hope that he's able to do what he said he can.
What Colding wants most from a Trump presidency is conservative judges.
It come down to the fact, basically, who was going to appoint the Supreme Court judge. And I felt that he'd probably, I don't know, make a better choice when it comes to our Supreme Court judges.
The 81-year-old Colding says he can't recall an election as unusual as this one, and he's tired of campaigns that seem endless.
Good morning.
Good morning.
On a downtown Moorhead sidewalk, I meet Shannon Chalet, who just voted in her first election. The 19-year-old Minnesota State University Moorhead student voted for Trump because he brings a fresh perspective.
You know, I think Trump might actually do something well for this country.
Chalet wants Trump to shake things up in Washington.
I just want him to change things. I mean, I think people are a little too sensitive these days, and I don't know, we need something different. I feel like America's just kind of in a rut.
Voters here almost evenly split between Clinton and Trump, so I also run into several Clinton supporters. 55-year-old Diane England from Moorhead says she cast her vote for Clinton reluctantly.
Because I wanted to vote against Trump. Not that I was real thrilled with Hillary either. I really felt this election was a farce. But we've got what we got, so let's hope that it's going to be the best.
England says she worries about how President-elect Trump will handle international conflicts and also that he will ignore climate change.
But as far as, like, bringing jobs back to America, I'm all for that. You know, I would like to see these poor economies get some help, but I guess we're going to just have to wait and see what's all going to go down, you know.
That wait-and-see attitude is a common theme. One Trump supporter who refused to give his name or be interviewed said, "Come back and talk to me in 2 years, and I'll tell you what I think." Outside a Moorhead restaurant, Al Napper says he voted for Clinton, but he's somewhat optimistic about a Trump presidency. Napper says he just wants to see the gridlock of the past 8 years end.
As much as I hated to see it go that way, maybe it's a good thing. You know, just maybe something can be done now. Before, it was always no to everything.
Like a lot of voters I talk to here, Napper says he'll reserve judgment until he sees what a Trump presidency delivers. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
Minnesotans who felt they were targeted by Donald Trump's campaign expressed disappointment and fear after his victory. Reham Fashir has more.
Election results were still rolling in when St. Thomas University student Danielle Wong went to bed. She was hoping that when she woke up, she'd see anyone but Trump was president.
But I woke up at about 2:30 in the morning to the sounds of students
chanting USA, USA, USA over and over and over again because our windows were open. And I just remember feeling this chilled feeling like go through my entire body, and I just couldn't stop shaking.
Wang is a 17-year-old daughter of immigrant parents from Indonesia and Malaysia. She and her roommate, an African-American, sat in their St. Paul dorm room, speechless, in tears after hearing the news. That same reaction echoed throughout other non-white groups, from Mexicans and Muslims to Arabs and Somalis. Some have felt alienated by the Trump campaign or even threatened. Trump launched his campaign with a speech last year that referred to Mexicans as rapists and criminals. He vowed to build a wall. He promised to ban all Muslims from entering the country. And less than a week ago, he accused large numbers of Somali refugees in Minnesota of joining terrorist groups.
This morning, it was sort of sad emoticons and a lot of I love yous.
That's Mohammed Rashidi, a Muslim whose parents immigrated to the U.S. from Egypt in the 1960s.
It worries me that there were so many individuals who were willing to vote for a man who embraced racism and misogyny and a disdain for immigrants.
While some children of immigrant families remain hopeful, others who came to the United States as refugees have doubts about their future. Zitao is a Hmong 23-year-old University of Minnesota student. She was born in a refugee camp in Thailand before moving to the U.S. in the late 1990s. Tao couldn't hold back tears as she talked about how this election will affect her and her friends of different ethnicities.
America's the only home I really knew. But then at the same time, it's like, I know there's a lot of people out there who are trying to figure out, you know, if this is the America that they know and this is the America that doesn't welcome them, where else can they go? I think that's the really tricky part right now.
Minnesota is home to more than 280,000 Latinos. Trump has said he'll revoke executive orders issued by President Barack Obama that allow undocumented immigrants brought to the country as children to get work permits and avoid deportation. Henry Jimenez is executive director of the nonpartisan Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. He says fear of deportation has got Latinos in Minnesota anxious.
That's a big one for Latinos, especially young Latinos who have only known Minnesota as their home because they either were brought here when they were months old and have never been to their country of origin. I would say the majority of them would say Minnesota is their home.
Trump has also pledged to stop admitting Muslim Syrian refugees fleeing a war-torn zone in the Middle East as a way to fight terrorism. But the anti-refugee sentiment has been alarming for just a handful of families who've just settled in Minnesota this summer.
They're very new here. They're just getting settled.
That's Sarah Fleming. She's co-founder of the group Minnesotans for Syrian Refugees. She assumes that refugee programs will be suspended when Trump takes office.
To have something like this happen, you know, right when you get here and you're the trauma that you're experiencing and transitioning as a refugee is very unsettling.
It's not the first time, though, that a politician runs a campaign with immigration as a high-profile issue. U of M immigration history professor Erica Lee compares Trump's message to that of the American Party back in the 1850s. Back then, Irish immigrants were viewed as a minority that wasn't assimilating like other European Americans.
There was the same concern over a changing America, a changing, you know, ethnic makeup in America.
Controversy over immigration may not be new, but it's left many in Minnesota feeling unsettled about what the future may bring. With reporting from John Collins, I'm Rehan Fashir, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota's 2nd Congressional District will stay in the Republican column. Jason Lewis won the state's only open seat Tuesday, as 7-term Congressman John Klein will retire this year. Peter Cox has more about Lewis's victory.
Jason Lewis sees the major Republican victories, including his own Tuesday night, as a mandate.
Trump shocked everybody, and again, taking Democratic states, taking the Senate, keeping the Senate, keeping the House. Now you've got a Republican president. That's a mandate. And so it means they got to fulfill a mandate, or they got to move on something and deliver. And that's as it should be.
Lewis edged out Democrat Angie Craig, taking 47% of the vote to her 45%. The former conservative talk radio host says his victory shows people wanted a change, especially on issues like the deficit and health care.
They wanted solutions. They said, tell me what you're going to do to lower my health care premiums. So that was I did stick with that. I mean, our campaign stayed on issues because I did sense that people were tired of politics as usual. So to that degree, I think we were right.
But Lewis might have been helped by a third party. Independence Party of America candidate Paula Overby got nearly 8% of the vote.
It's likely that she did take votes away from both candidates, but probably more from Craig, given that they had more similarities from a policy perspective than Lewis and Overby did.
Catherine Pearson is an associate professor of political science at the University of Minnesota. Pearson says Craig's strategy to try to tie Lewis to Trump backfired, as it did in other down-ballot races.
I think it didn't succeed as a strategy in the 2nd District because Trump performs better than expected in the 2nd District, as well as all over Minnesota.
Andy Craig was not available for comment for this story. The 2nd District includes counties south and east of the Twin Cities, including Dakota, Scott, Goodhue, and Wabasha. President Obama took the district by a slim margin in 2012, and Democrats, seeing an opportunity, poured money into the race. Craig raised more than $3 million in contributions, while Lewis brought in just under $1 million.
Frankly, it's gratifying that, in my view, the truth won out, but more importantly, that money isn't everything in politics.
Lewis takes office on January 3rd. With reporting from Brian Baxt, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Republicans in the Minnesota Senate are set to meet today to pick a new leader for their caucus. They took over the majority in the election on Tuesday, and it looks like it could be another acrimonious year at the state capitol, with both the Senate and the House in Republican hands and DFL Governor Mark Dayton in office for 2 more years. Both Dayton and Republican leaders say they hope to compromise on issues including health care costs, the state budget, and transportation next year. But as Tom Scheck reports, they're also preparing to point the finger of blame at the other side if things don't go their way.
One day after the election, House Republicans were busy celebrating an expansion of their majority to 76 seats in 2017. Senate Republicans were also cautiously optimistic a one-seat majority will hold after automatic recounts in 2 legislative races are settled. Throughout the campaign, Democrats and Republicans weren't sure which party would win control of the House. The Senate was an even bigger reach for the GOP. But Republicans said MnSure, the state's health insurance exchange, became a big issue. Regina Barr says she won her Inver Grove Heights-based House seat because voters were upset over rising health care costs.
The last several weeks, it's all been health care, health care, health care. I mean, people are hurting, and it's really, as a first-time candidate and a newly elected representative, it was really heartbreaking for me to hear some of the stories and how people are going to do without.
Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd says fixing MnSure will be a key issue for them next session. He said some sort of premium relief will be passed in the short term. Over the long term, Dowd wants to dismantle the entire program. Dowd says health care wasn't the only issue that helped them. During yesterday's news conference, he said voters also liked the idea of divided government.
Voters chose compromise last night instead of giving one party control to Governor Dayton and the Democrats, and they spoke very clearly.
But compromise could be hard to come by in the upcoming session. DFL Governor Mark Dayton has 2 more years in his term and doesn't appear willing to budge on key issues. He says Minnesota voters sent a mixed message by narrowly backing Hillary Clinton for president, but also supporting GOP control of the legislature.
Minnesotans are very closely divided, and there's stark differences between those two groups of Minnesotans and the people who have been elected to represent them.
Dayton and Republicans will also face a rerun of divided state government in 2011. That year, a budget impasse between the two sides resulted in a government shutdown. While Dayton says he's willing to work with Republicans this year, he warned the outcome could be messy again.
It's going to be unrealistic for Minnesota to send a group of people that are closely divided and have very deep differences and expect it's all going to be peace and harmony. It's not. They send us a divided government to Minnesota, here at St. Paul, and they're going to get divided government, for better and for worse.
In addition to Minshew, Dayton and Republicans face stark differences over other issues. Dowd opposes a move by the Met Council and local governments to pay for the Southwest Light Rail line between Eden Prairie and Minneapolis. He believes it still needs legislative approval.
We don't think that the project should proceed until the legislature has transparent public hearings and approves the funding at the legislative level.
Dayton says Republicans have to come up with an alternative if they push to eliminate funding for the line. Both Dayton and Dowd also won a special session to help Minnesotans struggling to pay for rising health care premiums. But they disagree over whether other items should be included in the special session. Dowd wants a tax cut package, but Dayton is ruling it out.
If we're going to get involved with all the other rhetoric about, you know, Minshew and the Affordable Care Act and all the other, you know, things that they couldn't agree on last spring and couldn't agree on all summer, then, you know, I'm not interested in pursuing this any further.
The next session begins on January 3rd. Covering politics, Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.